Welcome in, former NHLer, current Kings analyst for Storytime today, Daryl Evans joins us. Daryl, welcome back to the show. Hope things are well. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope things are well with you guys. It's definitely been a long break, that's for sure. Actually, considering all and everything, it's actually the time has gone by pretty good. It's been an opportunity to spend some time with some family and that, and slow things down a little bit, but definitely missing our great game of hockey, that's for sure.
So, Daryl, in story time, we kind of like to go back to, through the career of all the guys we have on, and everybody has unique paths and storylines. You're an Ontario kid growing up in Canada. So, were you hockey all the time, or were you like most kids growing up in the 60s and 70s playing multiple sports?
Yeah, I was probably a two sport guy. I played hockey during the winter, and then in the summertime, I was a baseball player. I think my dad probably, if he would have had his choice, it probably would have been, he wanted me to stay on the path of baseball. That was what he did as a career. And he was in the Brooklyn Dodgers organization. Never played for the big team or anything like that, but he was in their organization as a youngster growing up. And that's where his passion was. He actually coached me a little bit with my baseball, but it was, hockey in the winter months, baseball in the summer months, and that was pretty consistent, from the early stages. I wasn't an early, bloomer for hockey. I didn't start till I was 8 years old and couldn't even skate my first year, so I was a goalie my first year. And, I got into position the one game there where my mom and dad weren't at the game, and I got hit between the eyes with a puck. Somebody could actually raise the puck, and it happened to hit my little ginger nose and give me a couple of black eyes. I went home looking like a raccoon, and my dad came home from his Saturday job and asked me how my game of hockey was. I told him I loved it. He looked at my face and he said, "Next year you learn to skate or you don't play." And then things really turned that summer. He put me in a power skating school, and the coach that I had at that time had an incredible impact on my skating ability and my passion for skating in the game. And that was a turning point right there. I became an all-star the next year, and everything just seemed to take off in with regards to hockey from there.
What transitioned from baseball to hockey? How did it help you become a damn good goal scorer on the ice?
Well, I think when you look at any sport, it's the hand-eye coordination. Whether you're swinging a bat at a baseball, or golfing, catching in football, or shooting a puck in hockey. I think there's a lot of hand-eye coordination in there. I think when you look back, you go to the generations, the 50s, the 60s, even the 70s, there was a lot of athletes that played multiple sports. Now the young players that are growing up, they're kind of being, directed into a sport at a real young age, and they're not getting that versatility and that cross-training. They're being specifically trained for the game of hockey and for whatever other sport, whether it be baseball, football, basketball, any of those sports. Not to say that that's not a good thing, but I think there's probably some value in that cross training. It gives you a little bit of a mental break for one thing, a little bit different approach. You use some of the similar muscles. The mindset is definitely, it's got to be of similarity because you're going to be competing again. So, I think it was a nice little break at that time to be able to go and, baseball was definitely a slower sport, not nearly the pace that hockey kept, but, in some ways it probably gave the body a chance to, heal in the off season. Some of the bumps and bruises and things like that. You might get some more strains and type of things, from running and, maybe some strawberries there from when you're sliding. But, aside from that, I think there was a nice break from one sport to the other. And then as you get to an older age, I think that's when you're really going to, focus in and, pick the one sport and that's going to be the path that you're going to go upon. But I think there's a little bit of value to play multiple sports at a young age for sure.
Daryl Evans joins us. Daryl, then, of course, you went and played in Ontario. Now the OHA, now the OHL. And you were starting with Niagara. And I look at your first year, you had 100, you had basically a point a game, 64 points in 65 games, 110 PIMs. But your penalty minutes went down after that, and your point totals went up significantly. So as a rookie, were you playing more of an agitator, aggressive role, and then became a goal scorer in years two and three?
When I actually got drafted by the Niagara Falls Flyers, I had never played forward till junior hockey. I'd always been a defenseman, and that went way back to when I was 9 years old, 10 years old. First coach that I had, because of my skating ability, my ability to be able to shoot the puck, he saw something in the way that I saw the game that he thought there was value putting me on the blue line to be able to, you know, bring the puck out of my zone and, you know, and to attack from back there. And, you know, that was an era when, you know, watching Bobby Orr, that kind of stuff. So that was real cool, kind of being a defenseman with some ability to be able to skate and shoot the puck. So I was drafted as a defenseman when I went to Niagara Falls. And after one day at training camp, we had a lot of veteran guys coming back, you know, for the next season. And there was one other rookie that had been drafted that year, and that was Mark Botella, who eventually went on and played in Philadelphia. And, you know, when we stood side by side, he was 6'7", about 235, 240 pounds, and I was whatever I was, 5'7", 5'8", and about 145 pounds. So definitely he was going to be the defenseman, and I was going to have to make an adjustment. So Bert Templeton, who was coaching us at the time, you know, he asked me, he goes, "You ever played forward?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "Well," he says, "if you plan on playing on this team," he says, "you better learn by tomorrow," he says, "because I got no room for you on defense." And I came to training camp the next day, and that first year, my line mates were Stan Adams, who was Frank Mahovlich's nephew. He eventually, I think he was a second-round pick after that season to the New York Rangers. He ended up getting in a car accident, broke his neck, and never played after that. And then Mark Osborne, you know, who played for Toronto, Detroit, and a number of other teams, he was my winger. So we had a great line. You know, Mark was, you know, one of the guys got more in the corner. And, you know, I always had the shot, and I could skate. And Stan was kind of the veteran, you know, the puck mover. And he was the guy that kind of quarterbacked that line. So it was a great experience. It was quite a transition because at that time, the OHA or OHL, whatever it was called, OHA at that time, there was a 20-year-old draft. They still hadn't gone to the 18-year-old draft yet. So we were playing against much older type of guys. And it was really competitive. So I think that's where, you know, maybe the upside on the penalty minutes a little bit, because you got to go out there and you got to hold your own out there. You know, you can't let, you know, anybody push you around. And I think maybe that was the case where the penalty minutes were up a little bit, and probably a little bit to do with the coaching as well. Bert Templeton, you know, if you didn't play a rugged type of game and a physical type of game and stand up for yourself, you probably wouldn't get on the ice. So I think that's what brought everything together, and it was a great year. I mean, you know, as a rookie, it was my first year playing forward, and I scored 39 goals. And, you know, had there been an 18-year-old draft that year, I may have been drafted a little bit higher than I was eventually the next year.
Daryl Evans joined us talking about his career and his run through professional hockey. Daryl, one of your teammates was Steve Larmer. I've only met him a couple times. He seems like a really intense guy. What was he like a teammate when you were both 17?
He was a great teammate. He and I actually lived together, so we were actually roommates too. We stayed with an elderly couple, and he was a different type of guy. But boy, he was a competitive and an intense guy when he got on the ice. If you know, he was never one that, you know, he would do extra things to like physical conditioning, whether it was, you know, extra skating or, you know, to get himself in tip top shape. He had himself a great gift, and that was to be able to put the puck in the net and find the right spots on the ice. And he played on the line that year with Steve Ludzik, and the two of them went to Chicago to play with the Blackhawks for a number of years. But Steve had, you know, a knack to be able to find the spots in the offensive zone, a great shot, and he took a lot of abuse when it came to scoring a goal. He was he'd fight for any puck there in the offensive zone. You know, maybe a little bit lazy, you know, in some plays, you know, going back the other way. But I think when push came to shove, he really was more of a competitor than I think a lot of people have expected. And I think when you look at the numbers that he put up and longevity, I mean, he had a consecutive game streak of over 800 games there going, which was pretty incredible. So he was a lot of fun to live with. We went to school together. We shared a couple of classes, and we had a lot of laughs. But definitely a great teammate, and was a good friend through those junior years.
Daryl Evans joins us. So, Daryl, you're playing in Niagara, and then actually you go to Brantford your final season. You got traded three games into the year, and then you score 58 goals in 58 games, 112 points. You're lighting it up. And then you go to the IHL at the conclusion of that season, score 5 points, probably feeling pretty good about yourself in the summer of 81. And then now you turn pro, and you go to your first Kings camp as a professional, because obviously in the past you could go to camp, but you had a chance to go back to junior. Tell me about maybe your approach in that summer of 81, 82, you know, when you knew you were going to be a professional hockey player.
Yeah, that was one of those forks in the road. I think being able to gain that experience, as we got beat out in the playoffs when I was with the Brantford Alexanders my last year of junior, going up and playing that final weekend with the Saginaw Gears in the International League, it really was a great lesson for me. There were three games left in the season, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evening. I played in all three, scored a goal in each of the three games, and had a couple of assists as well. That was a good experience. And I remember Don Perry, who was the coach of that team, who eventually was a good coach of New Haven the next year, and then later in that year became the coach of the L.A. Kings. Never would have thought I would have played for him on three different teams within one calendar year. So it proved to be a very valuable time for me playing against men. I mean, the International League at that time had a reputation of being a very, rough league. The Central League had folded that year. So in Saginaw, they had a number of players that got sent down from L.A. Central League team. That was in Houston. So we had some good players come down, and that team was going to compete for the championship in the playoffs. And Don Perry asked me to hang around, and I did. The only way I think that I could get into a playoff game is if there were three or four injuries at that time. And, the chances of that happening in the playoffs, everybody's going to, play whenever they can. So I just practiced with the team from time to time. It was about 8 weeks. We, the team eventually went on and won the championship. And I think I matured a lot as not only as a hockey player, but probably as a young man as well. And then I think that gave me a chance to build some relationships. So when we went to training camp the next year, when I was actually going to become a pro, it just made that transition a little bit easier, because things were a little bit tougher back, 40 years ago than they are today. The players today, they get in for development camps, prospect camps. They meet, all the scouts and this, and constant conversation. The strength and conditioning coaches are in touch with them. So, when they get to training camp, they're very familiar with the building they're in and the personnel that they're around. We didn't have that luxury at that time, so I was able to build a little bit of that in that end of the season there with Saginaw.
And Daryl, thanks for joining us. So your rookie year, you start with the New Haven Nighthawks in the American League. Then you get called up to the Kings. You play 14 games, but then you get into the postseason. And you're going up against the Oilers. They got Gretzky and Curry, and like the Oilers, that was the start. Everybody knew they were great, but you guys knocked them off in five games. And of course, you had the miracle on Manchester. Game three, when you look at historical games in the NHL, it's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, playoff comeback ever. And you scored that overtime winning goal. But like, you guys were down 5-0 midway through the second period. Like, the emotions of that game, when you look back on it, even this, this many years later, almost 40 years later, you still got to kind of chuckle at how that game unfolded.
Well, no doubt. I mean, when you look at that, that whole playoff, just the way that whole series developed, I think the teams were separated by 46 points. The Edmonton Oilers were, definitely the class of the NHL. And, we got into the playoffs just because you had to have four teams in your division get in. And I think it was the Colorado Rockies that were the team behind us that, that we beat to that position. So, I think we were just looked upon as, going to be a victim there in the first round. One thing that definitely benefited us as the Kings was being a short series. Just being a 3-5 series, if you can get lucky enough and go capture, one of the first two games, in their building, you put yourself in a pretty good position. We had no pressure upon us. You look at that first game, 18 goals combined between the two teams. That's an NHL record. That was an incredible game. Then the next night, when Gretzky scores in overtime to beat us 3-2, I think everybody, and probably including ourselves, we were probably a little bit more on our heels now. And especially when game three started and they jumped out to a 5-0 lead, everybody that expected that, that's what the Oilers would do to the Kings that year, and would make easy work of us. So I think we, at that point, we'd already achieved more than we thought, or more than anybody thought we would. And I think the mindset was just to, being down by five goals going to third period was, just try to win a period and, kind of salvage a little bit of face in that game, and give our fans something positive to cheer about. And one thing led to another, scoring a couple of minutes into the period, and and then a major penalty late by Unger. It just continued to keep growing and growing, and snowballed into something that became an incredible night. And I was fortunate enough to be part of it, and get an opportunity to play a significant part there in overtime, getting on the ice and with Doug Smith winning the faceoff to finish the game off.
you know, in every comeback, there's, you know, you mentioned a few of them, but there's always, I feel like, one moment where the team that has the lead is like, oh my God, this could actually happen. Did you get a sense when you were, you know, with the Kings, where that moment might have been for the Oilers, where that was like, oh boy, this is gonna bust loose?
You know, I think there was a time, you know, it was almost like there was a couple of little moments. By the middle of the period, we'd made it 5-2, and at that time, 9:56 left in the period, a bunch of us got those mystery 10-minute misconducts for hanging around an altercation, and we got put in the locker room. So that's where I watched the last 10 minutes of that game, was from the locker room.
What?
And, you know, so we're kind of watching things unfold, and, you know, the Oilers, they had, you know, a breakaway. They had a couple of chances, and it just seemed like when they weren't able to capitalize on those opportunities, that things were kind of turning in our favor. And then watching it kind of all unfold, you know, when we get down, we finally make it 5-4. I think it was not, you know, can we do it or will we do it? Was there going to be enough time left on the clock? There was no doubt that the momentum on our, you know, was on our side at that time. The facial expression of the Oilers had changed from being very confident, you know, about the way things were going. Then all of a sudden, you know, they knew now that they were in a position that they might not be able to turn the tide in their favor. So it's, you know, I think from that standpoint, there was a couple of times, like I say, when they missed breakaways and that in the third period, a couple of chances around the net that they weren't able to capitalize on. That, you know, leads you to believe that, you know, something's working in your favor. And then after we did tie it up, and, you know, we started overtime, and Mario Lessard ends up out at the Kings blue line there traveling after a puck. And I think, I'm not sure if it was Messier or not, and they had a chance to put one in the, you know, basically an empty net there, and we were able to recover on that. When you see little things like that happen, you know that everything is, you know, is going in the other team's favor, and that's eventually what happened. But there was definitely a couple of parts, but I think probably the first time is when they missed a couple of those breakaways in that third period that, you know, we'd scored a couple of goals at that point, and now all of a sudden you feel like, okay, you know, these things are happening for a reason, and it turned out to be, you know, a game that, you know, here we are almost 40 years later talking about as, you know, one of the greatest comebacks in playoff history.
Darrell Evans joins us, the miracle on Manchester. And, you know, Darrell, that, you know, the Kings didn't have a ton of success. And I know that didn't guarantee you the series. It was only, you're only up 2-1 in the series, but you ended up winning it in five games. You know, LA wasn't necessarily a hockey hotbed, but did that series get you guys some more attention than usual? Did you find like LA fans are, oh, hey, you know what? There is this hockey team here and it's kind of fun.
Yeah, you know, I think it definitely played a little bit of a part. You know, you figure that, you know, that's 82 and, you know, half a dozen years, you know, almost before, you know, before Wayne comes, you know, to Los Angeles. But I think by winning that series against the Oilers, it definitely, you know, caught some people's attention. You know, we had a loyal group of fans. It wasn't as, you know, as deep and as widespread as it is today, but there was a group of loyal fans, that, and a lot of them are still with us today, you know, the ones that are of age or, you know, started watching that at a young age that carried on watching. But there's no doubt, you know, that was it. That was a little part, but I think, you know, the big thing and the big growth came when, you know, when Gretzky signs with the Kings and, you know, that deal is made there. That just took things to a whole different level because now all of a sudden we had the, you know, we had the piece that, you know, the name that was going to draw the attention of all the, you know, all the celebrity people. And, you know, he was as good as it gets. I mean, our game had no, you know, no greater name at the time. And you know, it and what Wayne did, and, you know, prior to coming to Los Angeles and then what he did in Los Angeles, you know, it just kind of solidified everything that, you know, when the game got here. And there's no doubt that, you know, he left his footprint on it. And, you know, not only here in Los Angeles, and then you see teams go up in Anaheim. Now there's teams in Vegas, you know, team in Arizona, San Jose. I mean, the growth of the game, you can't say enough about, you know, the impact that Wayne had and, you know, in coming to Los Angeles and taking it to a level that I don't think anybody ever dreamed about.
Daryl Evans joins us, former NHLer, now a Kings analyst. Daryl, you know, you had just incredible ability to score goals. And yet, other than one, you know, kind of really good year in LA, it seemed like it was hard to transition that to the NHL level. Was there, where, you know, looking back on it, and I have regrets as a player, not regrets, but there's things I might have done differently as a player to change my career. What was it that, you know, in the outside of the NHL, you're scoring massive amount of goals, but maybe couldn't push it into that next level?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with timing. You know, I don't regret anything. You know, I know when I played, you know, when I was playing with the Kings there and I got that opportunity in the playoffs and, you know, was able to lead the team in scoring that year as a rookie. I mean, that was a, you know, an opportunity, you know, that I think probably showcased, you know, what I was capable of doing. Being a smaller player my entire career, whatever, regardless of what level I played at, I always had to prove myself. I think one thing that didn't play to my favor is that I had a two-way contract. So when it came to making decisions with guys, you know, who can you send down, who's got to stay up, I think that played against me because I seemed to be the guy that, you know, that got pushed down. You know, I go from, you know, leading the team and scoring that year in the playoffs, and the next year I had a reasonable year at 18 goals and 40 points in an 82-game season. Not, you know, pretty good numbers for a young kid. And,
absolutely.
You know, and then I remember going to, you know, contract, you know, I went to arbitration to negotiate a contract. And, you know, that didn't play to my favor from regards of, you know, negotiating and playing, you know, within the organization. I found myself back in the minors. And, you know, I kind of, you know, it was a little bit, you know, mind-boggling because I always did what they asked me to do. When they sent me down to New Haven, they wanted me to, you know, to become a consistent scorer. And, you know, that was the year that I ended up, I put up 51 goals in 69 games.
Yeah.
You know, so, it was, you know, I did what they asked me. And when they called me up for a short period of time, you know, they played me down, you know, on a, you know, a third or a fourth line and wanted to make sure that I could play a complete, you know, 200-foot game. And I did that. My plus minus was good. I wasn't putting the puck in the net. And, you know, so they sent me back and said I wasn't scoring enough. So it was, you know, it's kind of, you know, they use statistics in their favor, you know, to kind of work against me. But, you know, I think all in all, it's, you know, a lot of it has to do with timing. And, again, I think having, you know, having to play with a two-way contract hurt me at that time. I think if I could have found a way to be able to play a couple of years, I think my consistency would have, you know, would have been there as it was at every other level that I played at, you know, whether it was junior hockey, the American Hockey League, you know, I'd scored 40 goals in the American Hockey League, over 50 goals in the American Hockey League, and, you know, eventually went on to Europe and excelled there as well. So, you know, again, I don't regret any of it. You know, just I'll never, never, you know, turn my back on what I was able to accomplish, you know, in my short time in the NHL. It was something that I'll never forget and wish I would have had more time. Of course I do, but I don't regret anything. And, it, you know, it's led me to be in a position where I'm right now and enjoying every minute of it. And it all has to come from the great game of hockey. So no regrets on anything.
Daryl, how did you get into broadcasting?
Well, that's a little bit of a funny story. When Wayne came to LA, then Sam McMaster was signed as the general manager. Sam McMaster was my manager growing up as a youngster playing hockey, and he was my general manager in junior when I was with the Niagara Falls Flyers. He put that team together. He happened to be on the same plane as my brother when I was picking him up at the airport in LAX. And I happened to run into him. That was a time that we could sit curbside and not have to worry about getting pushed away from there. And he asked me what I was doing. I told him I was managing a car dealership, a Cadillac dealership. And he said, "Oh, I'm going to, you know, I'll be needing a car." And he says, "You know, give me your card." He says, "I'll give you a call tomorrow and, you know, see if we can put something together." And when you're in the car business, you know, you kind of hear that one all the time. Give me your card and I'll give you a call. And I'll be damned the next morning. I get a call from Sam early in the morning, you know, and he said, "Oh, you know, King told me to go ahead and, you know, to look at a car with you." And next thing you know, we ended up putting a deal together that led to us trading, I think it was three vehicles at the time. And there were some tickets exchanged. There was a picture in the program, which was my picture at the dealership. And there was a 30-second radio commercial that was kind of, you know, hovering out there. And one day somebody from the Kinks called and, you know, said, "Daryl, you know, your dealership has not sent anybody over. You know, your advertising people haven't come to cut the commercial yet." Well, I talked to the president of my car dealership. I said, hey, I says, you know, we're losing out on airtime with the Kings. You know, they played so many games, and, you know, we've missed out on 30-second commercials, you know, through the games. I said, well, why don't you go do it? And I'd never, you know, done anything like that before. So I said, all right. So I called, you know, I called the Kings up, and I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. The Kings want me to do it. And I said, okay, you know, meet Nick Nixon. He'll meet you at the game. You know, the game's at 7:30. He'll meet you, you know, come around 4 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock, and, you know, cut it, and we'll give you a couple of tickets and watch the game. So that particular game that I went to go cut the commercial at, Mike Allison was Nick Nixon's partner, and he wasn't in the rink yet. And I said, oh, I said, you know, where's Mike? I says, you know, has he come a little later? He goes, oh, he goes, you know, he had some bad news from back home. I'm not sure if there was a passing in the family or something had happened that he was making arrangements to have to fly out the next morning. He says he's going to come do the game, then he's leaving in the morning. I thought, you know, gee, sorry to hear, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then I kind of looked at the schedule, and whether they played was the next night or the two nights later. I said, well, who's going to do the game, you know, the next game with you? He goes, well, I hadn't thought about that. I said, I'll do it with you. And that's how I did my first game. So he handed me, the Kings handed me a media guy. They were playing against the St. Louis Blues, and I took that home with me. And whether it was the next night or two nights later, I came and I did the game as an analyst with Nick. Kings liked what I did in the broadcast. And the next year, because Mike decided he was going to go back home, and they'd offer me the position the next year. By that time, I had established myself in the car business, and I couldn't kind of pull back. My son was just born. I just purchased a house, and, you know, financially, I couldn't make the move at that time. So they said, well, we'll stay in touch, and that's when Cammy Granato came on board. And then Cammy, shortly after making the decision to come to the Kings, she decided she wanted to, you know, give it one more crack with the national team. And they asked me if I could fill in for, you know, a handful of games or so. And it turned out to be, I think it was 17 or 18 games the next year that I filled in for. So I got a good taste of it. And then by the end of the year, they had approached me to come be the director of suites and premier seat sales for Staples Center that was going to open up in the fall. And because of my sales experience, they wanted me to head off that department. Then they offered me the general manager's position at the training facility that we still practice in today. They were going to open that up, and they wanted me to run that. So I accepted that job as well. And then a short period of time later, they offered me the radio job as well. So I was wearing a lot of hats there for a while.
Jeez.
It was a great time. And, you know, it was a kind of an odd way to get back into the game of hockey, let alone into broadcasting, something that I never even dreamed about doing.
Oh, that's fun. And what about Daryl, you're one of the sharpest dressed guys. Have you always had an eye for fashion, or did you have anybody help you?
Daryl.
No, I mean, the like for that comes on my own. I think it goes back to, you know, being a kid. I mean, I was in a very, middle class, you know, lower, you know, upper lower class, middle class family. So, you know, I remember having, you know, getting my first suit and how much pride I took in that. And, you know, then my first three-piece suit and that. And then, you know, kind of evolved a little bit, you know, being down in the minors there, my first, you know, couple of years in that, when the leather pants were around, the fedoras were around, leather ties and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, getting back out here, and get involved in the broadcast and that, I always liked stuff that was a little bit different and, you know, had a little bit of flair to it. And it just continues to keep growing. And then I now actually have the girl who makes my suits now. She used to be on our ice crew a number of years ago, back in 2012 when we were around. And she was at fashion school. And I said, oh, for men's clothes? She goes, no. She goes, you know, women's clothes. I said, well, when you get involved in men's clothes, I said, let me know. I said, I'll be your first client. And so a couple of years go by in 2014, and she eventually gets involved in men's clothing. And today, now she runs her own little business. It's called Gentleman's Jersey, and I have a lot of fun with her. We go down to the material stores, the cloth stores downtown L.A. in the fashion district, and we pick out the materials, and then she works her magic putting the stuff together. But I have a lot of fun with it, you know, especially when it comes to you know, like theme nights, holiday nights, and things like that. And now it's at the point where, you know, people look forward to see what I'm wearing. But I think it kind of speaks a little bit of my personality. You know, I'm outgoing, and, you know, I'm energetic, got a lot of life in me, and I think my clothing kind of expresses that.
Daryl, I love it, man. Great career, interesting story, and all the best in your broadcast career. Continued success, and hopefully we'll see you soon. I know we won't see you in the 2014 playoff, but hopefully next year everybody will be back traveling, and it'll be fun.
Yeah, they did that on purpose. We were the hottest team in the NHL when it ended. We'd won seven in a row. They knew we were coming strong. We feared everybody.
Oh, I love it.
Best of luck there. You guys enjoy it. Should be looking Thanks, forward buddy. To watching it. You know, when all the games get put on TV, and you know, hopefully as we start the next season up, like you say, it's business as usual, and we'll go from there. But best of luck. You guys stay healthy and well, and keep up the great work. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
You betcha. Thanks so much, Daryl.
My pleasure, anytime.